other people come, they can join us. If it gets too noisy, one of you guys can stay in the door, but it'd be nice to have some circulation, I think, just at the beginning. So, Tape Ministry can roll the tape. My name is Jake Jacobs, and I've lived here at Holden Village for 2 years, working mostly in operations. And this is just a session. We can all get together and pretty much share our experiences and stories, questions about something that seems to be a big issue in the church right now. It's the gay and lesbian issue. Well, I mean, you know, it's mostly just people, so we might as well talk about it and see what we can come up with. So I'd like to share a little bit about myself, and then we can go around the room. And if you want, you can share your name and what drew you to this session, maybe a question you have or an experience that made this particular session catch your eye. And we'll kind of go from there and share with each other. And the session is being taped. If that changes what you say or how you say it, please feel free to do so. But it's been a good resource for people who haven't been able to come to these sessions to be able to listen in on our conversation. So we do tape them. So let's see. I'm 24 years old. And I've been up at Holden for the last two of those, and pretty much came up here right after college. I worked for about 9 months in Phoenix, Arizona before I moved up here. And I would say that pretty much I've always known I was gay, but I didn't always know what to call it, or didn't really think it was such a good idea to pay attention to it either. And it wasn't really till I got into college that I started to come to terms with my sexuality. And really, a lot of people say, well, what are you doing up this Christian camp thing? Especially a lot of my gay friends. What are you doing hanging out with the Christians? They don't like you. But really, for me, those two things are completely intertwined. And I don't think that I could live in today's society as a gay person without my faith. Because to me, the simple fact that God says that God loves me is kind of what makes all the rest of the nonsense, whether it's losing my job or not being able to find housing or whatever it is, kind of puts all that in perspective and doesn't get me down so much. So I really feel like it's my Christian faith that gives me an ability to make sense of being gay and to make sense of how to live that in the world so that hopefully other people will begin to get used to the idea. It took me a while to get used to the idea, so I imagine it'll take most people. And after I leave here, I'm leaving in a week and a half, actually. And I'm going to seminary in Berkeley, California, at the Lutheran Seminary there. And I'm on the track to ordination, but I told my candidacy committee, just Lutherans do to kind of help you along, that I was a lesbian from the very beginning, and they're worried, and I'm just kind of, you know, seeing what's going to happen. So I don't know how that's going to turn out, but hopefully we'll. Having dialogues like these will especially help me to have dialogues with my committee. And I'm hoping that it'll help all of you in conversations you have other places in Holden too. So that's a little background. Can we just start and go around the room and say a little bit about why you came?
Well, I'm aware of the controversy in the church, and I am still in confusion myself, so I'm curious and want to find out as much as I can from all angles, and I hate to say all sides, but from all perspectives, so I'm still open and questioning. I am heterosexual, and I've had a few experiences that were less than fortunate with homosexuals of my same gender, and that has affected me to a certain degree. One was an Episcopal priest, and I felt preyed upon and abused, so I still have some issues with that. But I'm here.
I'm Juliet, his wife. I first became aware of gay issues when I came to Holden, I guess 10 years ago, when there was a social worker working with people with AIDS. And that brought out sessions of parents of whose kids had been able to come out to them, but no one else in the community. I mean, I saw the tremendous secrecy and just the burden that gays and homosexuals can live under, deciding to come out to one parent and not even to both, and sometimes dying, having only come out to one parent. I mean, just the agonies. And hearing people say things like, I don't feel safe going into a Christian church as a gay person, and thinking, that's terrible. A place where people ought to be able to find solace, and they feel shut out. So that was sort of the icebreaker for me. And then, as life experiences deal things to you, my daughter came out to me 2 summers ago and said, I'm a lesbian. I said, oh. I guess part of it is, I don't exactly know what to say to her. I mean, I'm affirming, but if she were in heterosexual relationships, I know I'd have an easier time talking to her about who she was seeing and stuff. It's like, I kind of don't know how to talk about this. I've had gay friends, and somehow when it's on a peer level, it's a little easier. I don't quite know how to handle this intergenerational thing with my daughter, other than to say, you know, how are your friends, what are you doing, that kind of thing. Are you safe? I mean, just all kinds of the mix. So that's kind of where my life is. And I don't think, we have 4 daughters and my daughter's only come out to me. I don't think her other stepsisters know this about her. So we already, you know, and I don't feel like it's my place to share it. I feel like when she's ready, she'll share it. So, you know, I'm even seeing the secrecy thing happen in our family.
Yeah, that's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I will say that before I became a Christian, I was playing in a rock and roll band in Seattle, and we played for a group called the Whiz Kids, who were an early kind of dramatic musical troupe of all gay and lesbian people. And they had the Gay Liberation Underground Cafe, and we used to play for all their events. And I played for a gay wedding in the Smith Tower. And at that time, I was totally open to anything. And then when I became a Christian, I realized some different things, or was taught different things. And that's where the controversy lies, in the concern right now. I'm not convinced either way.
Okay, I'm Rebecca, and when I was a freshman in high school, I got involved with a Christian group in my high school through it. And it was a group of about 9 or 10 people, and they had a very, limited mind. And one day we got into a talk about the rights of gays and lesbians in the church, and I was for it, you know, and they were against it. And so from then on, they kind of isolated me from the group and weren't really accepting, because I had this, you know, outside opinion that wasn't right in their minds. And so ever since then, I've just kind of been really interested in everything that had to do about it, and really, you know, so that's one here.
My name is Mike, and I'm only here because I'm really confused. I'm sitting on a committee at the congregation I belong to that is going through the process of trying to put together a letter that says that we are an open congregation.
That we are.
Hopefully, we are. And I'm only confused because I can't understand why we're not already. Why do we have to put out a letter?
How do you respond when people like say that it's sexually immoral or whatever it says in the Bible? I don't know what it actually says. What do you say? How do you respond to like when people?
I usually give them a couple of books that are over.
I have two roommates that are totally opposite from me, and I don't know if this issue is even going to come up, but I mean, I'm sure it will. Mm.
Yeah. I think really you can't convince people with you can't just be one argument. Like, there's no magic argument that makes everybody agree. And it takes a long time to get used to an idea that in our society has been vilified so much. And a lot of people have really strong reactions. And so, I mean, in my experience, what's actually made people most comfortable is just getting to know gay people. So, you know, invite your roommates to go to some event when they can meet actual real life gay people. Invite me over for dinner. But really, I think it just takes time to get to know people and understand, kind of sort out, to figure out, okay, this is a human being who's more or less like me, and how does that fit into the way I see the world? There's definitely biblical stuff, but I don't think using biblical arguments alone really helps people understand.
Yeah.
Because there's so much negative stuff going on in society.
I'm Julie. I'm a queer support person here. I've been here about a year now. And my church in Portland, Oregon, which actually won't be my church when I leave here because I'll be moving to Seattle. But anyway, my church is currently stepping its foot into becoming a Reconciled in Christ congregation. And that's basically a term that's applied to Lutheran congregations that is kind of code to gay and lesbian people that this is a safe place to be, or has the potential to be a safe place to be. And this is something that I'm very hopeful will happen in my church. Largely because for me as a lesbian, I don't know when I step into the doorway of a church if I'm accepted or not. And usually I have to assume that I'm not because of the precedent that's been set already by the church. But for a church to step out and say, we welcome gay and lesbian people, gay and lesbian, bisexual, whatever, however long you want to make that list. For the church to take that step and take that risk is a pretty good indicator to me that this is the kind of church that's both going to be welcoming and accepting of who I am as a lesbian, but also probably going into some direction, towards some directions that I'm pretty excited about the church taking. And that's more than just gay and lesbian bisexual issues, that's justice issues at large.
One kind of fellows here as well. My name is Sarah, and I'm a lesbian. I've been out for 13 years, I guess. My dad's a Lutheran pastor, so I grew up in the heart of the Lutheran church, and I went to a Lutheran college, and I worked at Lutheran camps, and I was on staff for Jerry Holden 12 years ago. I mean, I really belonged in the Lutheran church until I came out, and then immediately I was as far outside of Lutheran church as I had ever been on the inside of the Lutheran church or any church. And now, after so many years out of the church, I've crept back in, and I do mean crept back in, to a church in Bellingham, Washington, where I live. I go to evening services. They're very quiet, they're very private, they're intimate, they're meditative. I can go in, I can go to the service, and I can leave, and I don't have to do all that chit-chat that you have to do after Sunday morning. So it's a safe place, and it's only a safe place, or it's not only a safe place because of that, but it feels safe to me because of that. And I'm trying to figure out how I can become part of that church in a way that isn't going to flatten me again, like every other attempt of mine to come in again. And so I'm just trying to figure out how to do that.
I'm Mary, I'm Sarah's partner, and the only thing I have to do with the Lutheran Church is her stuff, so I'm just kind of curious about stuff. I was raised Catholic, but I haven't really been involved in the church for a long time, so I'm just curious.
Well, my name's Richard, and I work for a social service agency that works with street youth and deal with these kind of issues all the time, and from, you know, from one spectrum to the next. And I mean, with gay identity and part of sexual identity and a lot of things. So I'm just here to listen to one of us.
Where do you work?
It's called New Horizons in Seattle.
I'm Audrey. I work in middle school and high school as a drug interventionist, and work with a lot of young people who are speaking out to me about their sexual confusion. So I'm here to bring information.
Well, my name is Emma, and my friend recently came out as a gay man. And his parents really don't accept him at all, and he's was really ecstatic that me as a friend accepted him and really still loved him. And I'm just really upset because, I mean, I'm kind of upset to leave here because people here are so accepting and loving to all people, welcoming everyone, and that's just such a wonderful feeling. But going back to my home in Pennsylvania, I don't think any of my friends really care or even want to accept people into the church that are gay and lesbian, and that really hurts me. So I just want to come back with some strength, hopefully, to tell them what I really do.
My name is Janice. I'm just here to learn. I feel sad when I hear Sarah say that she feels that she can't go into a church except to creep in. I know I felt that way. I've been a minority of a different sort. As a divorced person, the Lutheran church, you know, it's not, I'm sure it's not the same thing, but it's somewhat similar. And I'm a recovering alcoholic. That still feels really strange to me because not many people know that in my church except for my pastors. And I think the whole purpose of the church, the primary purpose should be to share God's love, to feel that love, and it's really sad that it doesn't happen very much.
my name is Lois. I live in Brainerd, Minnesota, and I'm baffled by the things that I run into with people, the comments that they make. I can't understand that the thinking, I mean, for being a Christian, it's blocked. You know, it's like, well, I'm a Christian except for if I come in contact with a gay or lesbian person. And it baffles me, and I want to learn how to try and maybe make my points more reinforced. That, you know, God based his love on unconditional love. And in order to call yourself a Christian, I believe that we have to do the same. And I always speak out probably too much in a lot of cases. But I just, when I get into conversations where the Bible comes up, I have a harder time trying to prove my points. It's like, you know, they're like, well, you can't pick and choose parts of the Bible that you want to believe. And it's like, well, you know, it's
right. Yeah.
And it's contradictory, and the God I believe in couldn't, you know, turn his back on anyone for any reason. So, that's
basically. I came in late, and were you just asking persons to introduce Christ,
yeah,
why they came?
Why you came, your name, that's it.
My name is Christy, and I live in Seattle now, but I'm from Minnesota originally. That's why I talk this way. I'm here mostly just out of interest because I'm a voracious learner, especially if it's something that is not a personal experience of mine. I'm a heterosexual married woman, married to a man. But I have a background in the theater, and I knew many, many gay men in my theater experience. And they were some of my favorite men I ever met in my life. And not that I was prejudiced against homosexuality before that, but I thought, boy, any people who are this great can, you know, how could they as a class be considered all bad? I do not personally know any lesbian persons that are out. I have a quiet, somewhat sheltered social life, so anyone who, if that is their lifestyle, it is either private to them or I just am unaware. And I am sure that's a common thing in many social things. I myself feel personally very, very accepting, and I have the privilege of a mother who purposely raised me to be very accepting, and she has. Through my childhood, in a little teeny town in Minnesota with only 1,000 people, she had women friends who were lesbian women and were out, and currently Doug's too. And I loved the fact that it was a blended. My mother showed me that her life, her social life, was a blended life of people she liked and didn't say, I'm not letting my daughter marry any of those women or something that's what it could possibly be. So anyway, I'm just interested.
I guess one more thing I have too is we've gone around and I've heard the introductions. I teach high school and I hear an incredible number of homophobic comments, and my daughter has always, from middle school on, been a champion, the way I've heard some of you been willing to champion minorities, whether or not, you know, you consider yourself a part of that minority. And I find it shocking that gay and lesbian youth are, you know, among the highest statistics in the suicides and suicide attempts. And I think that's another place that we, whether it's through youth groups or the church body as a whole, need to reach out during this time of confusion and where do I fit and am I worth being affirmed. And if people who are gay and lesbian don't feel safe about coming out to society at large, then what's it like for a teenager struggling with issues, wondering, how much of this do I hide, what do I do? And, you know, you're talking about your friend and being slammed on by his parents, who knows how that'll sort itself out, and I don't even know if the church has resources to kind of help with family counseling through that kind of thing. So I guess I'm here to sort of learn what the range of resources are that I could help plug young people into, or families, or pieces of families.
People may have other resources. One of the best that's nationwide is PFLAG. His parents and friends of lesbians and gays. And you can pretty much look in your phone book and find a listing for them.
How do you spell it?
Just PFLAG. And that's, it's not a Christian organization, but they do a great job of being a safe place and answering questions and providing a place for parents, especially to come out and ask their questions. Because I know my parents felt, once I came out to them, then they were in the closet because they didn't have anybody to talk to. They couldn't talk to their friends or anyone they knew, really. That provides a good resource. And the Lutheran resource is Lutheran's Concern. There's some brochures over on the table, and they're kind of the big resource organization. Those are two big ones.
I don't know, I haven't experienced PFLAG personally, but I've read pamphlets and their advertisements, and they emphasize love, love, love. Mm-hmm. You know, the title of it is Parents, it included, you know, love basically comes along with being a parent and showing that the love needs to continue after this. And I'm so glad to see that as part of it. It's not a, we're going to try to fix our parents, change them, that other movement, or just to mope about it. And it's to continue the love.
Mm-hmm. My parents have the same way as yours, Jake, about how it is a place where you can ask all the questions. But it's not like it's a place where my parents, who had a hard time at first, they could ask all the questions that they couldn't ask anywhere else, you know, and they were tough questions, and it wasn't a place where everyone kind of, you know, you didn't have to soft pedal in PFLAG. I think you could really lay it out there and talk about it if you were mad about this or if you were upset about it or whatever, so.
Yeah, I think it can be really hard. There's, especially at Holden, there's kind of this prevailing opinion, like, we should all be fine with gays and lesbians. And that's even hard for those of us who are gay. I mean, when I was coming out, I was really scared. And some of that turned into a lot of anger. And just, like, wanting to avoid it or not talk about it or feeling like it was this big problem or something. I think it's important that we're honest about where we start, because if you just say, oh yeah, really I'm fine with it, and you're not sure, in the long run that kind of comes back to get you. So I hope that people still feel comfortable expressing their concerns and fears. Those were things for me when I came out that I had to deal with pretty much on my own, and I hope nobody else has to do that. Anybody else want to pick up on something that was said in the introduction?
Well, I'd like to just say that it seems like the whole issue to me, and I've only been here for 3 days, so I'm no expert, certainly on Holden, but it seems like it's a real low-key thing here now, and maybe that's because of the acceptance, do you think?
Mostly, yeah. Okay. I feel very accepted here.
Well, you're not just here as somebody they hired to come for one day to talk to us, and then you're gonna vanish. You're just here.
I kind of stick
and
around.
So, yeah. but what I mean is sometimes that's what it is—a little, you know, a little wandering congregation invites someone they found on a list, come talk to us, and then they go away, and then that's the end of it. And when it is a continuous presence, it makes a huge difference.
I'd like to have a sense of kind of the continuum of what is an accepting church like, and do churches have to go through this process to become a reconciling church? And, you know, I don't know the continuum out there.
That's a good question. In fact, that was a question the pastor of the church that I go to brought together a group of lesbians and asked us, what would it take for you to feel comfortable in this church? And it was such a profound question that we couldn't even begin. We just kind of sat there and tossed out a few tidbits. And to me that was the most striking thing about that conversation. One, that a pastor actually asked that question, and two, that we didn't have an answer. So full range.
I'd love to know any of your answers.
Mm-hmm.
Little teeny things or big things.
Let's start with what you hear in the sermons, preaching.
Mm-hmm. That church is pretty good.
Yeah, actually, that one of the reasons why I started going to that church was because the pastor preached a sermon where he advocated for the public recognition of same-sex couples, and he caught hell for it, and he didn't back down. So I thought, all right, I can stand by it. You know, I can. This could be a place. So.
Well, I mean, even the first time that we went with some friends to a Christmas service, and it was very inclusive in the prayers and the sermon for, you know, all range of, you know, people with different problems, families are falling apart, you know, and I don't know what
else. Those of us are on the outside. Divorced people is one of the, was one of the prayers, like you were talking about, being on the outside. Yeah.
And they said, he even said something about the church not getting in the way of people.
Their relationship with God.
Mm-hmm. So it was a pretty initially accepting kind of message. Mm-hmm.
So prayers and the sermon.
Mm-hmm.
And how about educational programs? From Sunday school through adult Christian education.
I don't know anything about what they're doing.
But I mean, what would be the actual original question?
Julie, you wanna?
As a Christian educator?
Yes, actually, I was Sunday school coordinator for many years at my church. And I was not out at my church. There is a Bible study that's put out by an organization that Lutherans concern, which is the Reconciling in Christ body of the Lutheran Church, but not directly associated with the Lutheran Church. But there's a Bible study that is put out that is a fairly good Bible study. It gives you some basics for how to start looking at the scriptures that are commonly used as bats against gay and lesbian people. And it also gives some real, I think, real good groundwork for looking at the Bible in a much more justice-oriented way, and a much more Christ-centered, I think, a much more Christ-centered way, which for me is fundamentally why I'm a Christian, or part of fundamentally why I'm a Christian. I don't know that I'm making any sense.
Well,
anyway,
about justice as opposed to specific wording in
right. But this Bible study is good in that it does recognize that for some people the specific wording is important, so it does get into that. So I'm actually fairly impressed with how it goes about doing those kinds of things. For me, as a Sunday school teacher, and having done some education, I would probably. There's things about that Bible study I don't like, just in that I don't think they're very functional for a classroom setting. But I think as a teacher, sitting down with that and making your own curriculum from that would be wonderful for a congregation to go through. If a congregation had gone through that and there were people who were committed to, there was a large group of people in the church committed to studying in that manner, I would be so pleased with the congregation. I think that would be wonderful. But also, so Bible study, I think, is important. Also, having forums, discussion groups like this, I think, is important to keep things out in the open and airing, to continue to have conversations. Because this is not something that can be just a one-time sort of deal. Mm-hmm. In fact, in Portland, there is one Lutheran church that's considered a reconciled church.
gain lesbian people don't go there. And it's largely because that church just has not continued in this process. This is not something that you do on Monday, you have a big celebration, and then it goes away. So continuing to have conversations about what's difficult here, how are we doing on this welcoming thing, that whole kind of thing. And also to be actively involved in justice issues around gay and lesbian issues. And I think it's important that the church be actively involved in justice issues in general, but specifically around gay and lesbian issues in the church. That's going to draw in a lot more than just gay and lesbian people, but it will draw in gay and lesbian people into your congregation because they're going to say, hey, not only are you accepting of me, but you're affirming of me, and this is my work too. And just being a lesbian in the church, I don't really have much of a choice but to fight. It's just not, I guess, there are people who make that decision, but it's not a decision I feel like I can make.
There are lots of other areas, but this one I have never heard addressed, and I'd appreciate it if any of you could give us some illumination here. The social life of the congregation. What would make you feel more welcome to a, I don't know, a potluck supper, anything from that to, if the congregation decides to see a film together, whether it's an adult kind of group, like we have a group called Koinonia that has been dominated by couples.
Meaning?
Heterosexual couples, you know?
Well, that's also an issue just for singles.
Absolutely, yeah.
More people without kids.
Yeah.
There's so much.
Yeah.
I think a visible mass of straight allies is important for me in the church. If I could know the names of a dozen straight allies that I had in a church who I could walk up to and they knew my name and they're like, oh, hi, Sarah, you know, how's Mary? And, you know, I knew their faces and I knew who they were and I knew that they weren't going to freak out when they finally learned that I was a lesbian, then I'd feel pretty comfortable because then I knew that I could hang with that mass, that critical mass, and I knew that I didn't have to fight all my battles by myself. I don't know how you feel, but I don't like being the center of, you know, the forums, the...
Yeah, right.
I am kind of a natural leader, but on the whole queer issue stuff, I like to step to the side and let people hash out because I made up my mind, you know? So the allies is something that's really important to me. And I think that would carry over to any social setting stuff about the church. And really for me, I think that's a critical area because to me, it's the whole social part of the church that I haven't figured out a way to become a part of yet. So that's the huge stumbling block for me. I could be a part of worship because anyone can walk in the door, but I don't know anyone else in the congregation.
Sarah, would it be a forum like this where you could figure out your allies? How would a church?
I don't know. In my wildest dreams, I've hoped for a list of queer allies in a bulletin. You know,
yes, please sign up
in the newsletter. Or we are so used to looking for any kind of cues. I mean, anybody who mentioned anything about I have gay friends. Oh yeah, I've done it. Oh, I've read this book. Oh, I have a gay brother. I mean, I could tell you anyone who has mentioned that. I'd be like, I know their faces. Oh, and so actually, the cue that I looked for in this church were the people on the homosexuality issue committee. I thought, well, these people will
they
be on the committee.
Yeah.
Then they are, at least half of them are going to be people that I can talk to. So,
well, I can tell you as a parent of a lesbian daughter, I look for those signs too because I'm not clear on when I can come out and what kind of discomfort that brings about, and also because my daughter hasn't given me real clear signals about how I can deal with this, and she's still in the community. I mean, I think she's come out at school, but I get somewhat mixed signals about that. And I know in my congregation, it's been other parents who have gay children and have talked about that. And so, and that was before my daughter came out. So, sort of wanting to see that affirmation for all kinds of minorities then has kept us in the mix. But I still want a sense of, would anyone be willing to walk through the doors? I mean, that we've all grappled with that. They've all said, if our kids lived in this community, would they come to this church? Would they?
That's a good question. I would really like to see the church do something with a problem that pervades society. I'd like to see the church lead the way. And that is that if you're of a so-called minority racial group, you are known primarily for that.
Yes.
No matter what your abilities, the talents are. When I teach a novel by an African American about African Americans, and there's only one African American in the class, you know, it's very hard not to turn to that student and say, could you help us here, you know? And then I think, how does that feel, you know, to keep on being the one identified? Well, it's the same thing, I figure, with gays and lesbians. And it gives me a great deal of pain. This social business gives me a great deal of pain because I have gay and lesbian relatives. My very best friend is a lesbian. And I know that these people would not feel comfortable in my home church. So, and it's a liberal church, as Lutheran parishes go. So what does that say, you know? And I think reconciling Christ is a great idea, but like you, I don't think it goes far enough. It doesn't really ask the congregation to commit itself to it, right? And I think it overlooks some things. It isn't courageous enough in my way of thinking. But, well, in a sense, I've been marked because when I became a feminist, I took it pretty far, you know. I guess I always was one, but I didn't have a name for it. But, you know, it was the early 70s, and then I became known, you know, what, Jan, she's a feminist. And people just know automatically what you're going to think about Jan. You know, they may even ask you.
In my church, the first hurdle I have to get over is the fact that I'm under 30, under 40, because there's a huge chunk in most congregations where there's no one in the church between the ages of 17 and 40. And so my first identity in the church is as the youth. And I guess I have come to a point where I'm okay with that. And I think I'll eventually come to a point where I'm okay with being known as the lesbian. But that's not a road that everybody can take. It's just too much burden. But I have been fortunate in my congregation to be able to become close with a smaller group of people, and that on my part has taken a commitment to be with those people regularly. And I think that that's a commitment we need to make in general as members of a church. Whether or not we're of any minority, we need to make that kind of commitment to be with our communities and become a part of that community. And if we don't do that, then how can we expect that people are going to accept anybody?
Well, I think loneliness within the church community occurs in any human being of whatever ilk of any kind. And it only is improved by your own personal attempts to. I moved from Minnesota to Bellevue almost 3 years ago. My husband had a job at Microsoft. And I'm an at-home mom, so I don't have a workplace to go to where you automatically meet people. And my first thought was, we bought our house and we drove by the kids' schools and I said, okay, we're picking a church because the day after we move in was going to be Sunday, and I was going to go there and I was going to get started because you have to have friends in your life. And I just, it worked so well for me to make that big effort. And it's scary. I have a big, strong, naturally shy streak, even though I'm also wild at the same time. I don't know how to describe that. Anyway, this big effort I made because I didn't want to have a pit of loneliness, which I have had at other times in my life, hoping people would seek me out. And an activity together has nothing to do with anything to do with your sexuality or your hair color or anything, but it's a way to find shared interests and become close and safe over time. It's really nice for anyone feeling outside, feeling alone. It's hard and scary though. I'm all the time the choir comes, not just Sunday, but on our rehearsal. So we're there, we see each other twice a week, sing away, honking away if we can't sing, you know, being bold and working on a hard, some huge cantata or something together. I find that choir to be a really safe place for people. I, for example, have chronic depression. I have trouble talking about that for a long time. I'll talk about it to anyone now because of all these loving people who have responded when I felt. But it was because of this constant, you know, getting used to each other, and a little small. Our church is large. We have 1,900 on our rolls. That doesn't mean I'll come, but that's what our roll is. And we have this huge, I think Julie was saying her church, or the age group, is mostly over 60. I mean, even the 40 to 60 is a little more representative. And I think for that age group where the closet was, had boards nailed over it, it didn't just have a lock or a doorknob. I think that age group can really find it hard to be accepted. As I said, I don't know from personal experience, but so if that's the dominance in your congregation, it's really hard to even bring up this, like, have the pamphlet sitting on the info table of reconciling Christ or something. Some people would take it and throw it away.
And that's the kind of situation I'm in too. It's a very predominantly older church. And, you know, even I'm here with a large group, there's about 30 of us, and I'm disappointed that I'm the one here. But so I know this is a discussion about within the church, but I'm interested too what can be done within the community. I mean, I'm outside Minneapolis, so it's like the farther you get out, the smaller the mind becomes. But it seems like I'm looking for things maybe within the community that I can look into, just because I'd like to take the naive view that everybody thinks like I do, and you know, what your sexuality is shouldn't even be, you know, it's like, you know, a big deal. You know, it's like, to me,
it's just one.
You're rich. Like the same deal. You know, like it should just be such a minimal thing because it's not who the person is as a person. But I'm interested in finding out what kind of organizations are out there or, you know, things like that to possibly, you know, get involved with or, you know.
Do you have a women's resource center type of place in Denver?
Not that I know of. I've only lived there.
So little. It's a decent size.
Yeah, it's like 14,000.
Yeah.
But so. I've only lived there too for a couple of years, you know, so, you know. And I guess I don't even really know how to seek it out because, you know, it's just not something people talk about.
It's not in the front page of the paper.
Right, and I mean, you know, I levitate towards people who think like me. You know, if I'm in a group and there's a conversation, for whatever reason, it comes up, you know, if someone thinks like me, I'm gonna levitate towards them to be surrounded by them, you know. Like in college, it was very open, and at Holden, it's very open, but, you know.
You know, if you said, oh, I went to this great forum at Holden, and the title was bold, That's a bold title. I love it. My pastor was here, she left this morning, but when we said how we said, that title is so excellent, you could insert any scary word in the book, that's it. It's just really good, right? You wrote it down. But, you know, this cue giver person, kind of like the French Resistance had little things that to show that they were safe. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could subtly be that person. Mm-hmm. And what a relief that would be for
that
a scared person.
Just that, like within work or whatever, you know, if I voice my opinion, then it seems like others, you know, come and then they start talking about it. And it's like, you know.
But why do you always have to be the one?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because it's like, you know, I'd like to think that it wouldn't even have to be brought up, you know, that I'd have to wear a t-shirt that says, you know, lesbian friendly.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
Friendly to all.
Yeah, you know, but that's in real life, percent. In real life, you know, you have to be able to say things, you know, it's like,
But you're talking about, as if I understood you correctly, you'd like to know about resources in communities,
right.
Not
right.
Just in the church.
Right.
Okay, so what can we offer here?
Well, I think that was a good guess about the women's center or women's.
Anything that has the word women's in its title often is an inclusive roof that means it's welcome for that. I mean, I'm from Grand Rayon, Minnesota. Little teeny town. We have all things like that, and we're in Bitsy Grand Rayon. Family Crisis Center, one of the things is called the pictures include nice, the logo includes a nice image. And the way the wording just in the letterhead top, you can tell that's a welcome place for
people. Yeah, well, you have to be a little bit careful.
Some of them are set up for anti-abortion.
They're from a Christian, right?
Very different. Yeah. The purpose of what I mean is that's a way to, you look for that in lists and phone books or whatever and inquire at those kind of places. That's a way to get your first thing.
You could also call PFLAG, and they would be able to connect you with all sorts of resources. Mm-hmm.
And or check them out on the internet.
That's the biggest.
And there's
thing.
Also likely in your town. I just have to get my copy in the mail today. This is the Portland Gay and Lesbian kind of magazine sort of thing. It's a bi-weekly thing. And in here is a list of quite a few resources in the Portland area, and some of them are great and some of them aren't so great, but at least it gives you some phone numbers to call or events that are happening, that kind of thing, so that you can at least figure out what's going on in the gay community. And churches are generally advertised in those kids' magazines as well.
How far are you from a university town?
There's a community college in Marin.
Yeah, there's a community college. I don't know. If, you know, I mean, there's Duluth and there's U of M in Minneapolis and Riverhead, but I went to Gus Davis at all of this, so I'm like, you know, down here with those little.
How about for those of you? How far is that?
It's probably
So, but what I'm suggesting is that if community colleges don't have a gay lesbian union, a major university is apt to. Don't you think, Senator?
Wait a minute. Oh, you look down. The community college in our town, Salem, Oregon, has a gay and lesbian organization. I mean, and Salem is not a bastion of liberalism. But sometimes I think it's just like opening a door a little bit. If you open the door a little bit and you find something, then pretty soon the rest of the door opens to you and you find much more. You know one person, and pretty soon that person connects you, and it's like an expanding universe or whatever it is. I found that, you know, as I link up with one person, and they teach me things and introduce me to people. To get started, isn't it?
Well, I'm certain that there are other churches of this type in the United States, but Jerry and I have found that going to All Saints Episcopal in Pasadena has been one of the best experiences of worship we've had. We don't belong there. We live an hour away and we worship in a Lutheran parish there and we're actively involved. But occasionally we have to get our fix at All Saints. And it's just wonderful. It could be the staid, well, you know, Pasadena is a very wealthy community, or it has had a lot of wealth. So you've got those folks there, and they have stayed, many of them. I cannot believe it. And they bless gay and lesbian unions, and the children of gay and lesbian couples come to Sunday school. They don't have to have anymore. They don't have to have forums every month, you know, to educate the education. But they went through that period, but it was hand in hand with all kinds of education about diversity issues, about peace and justice issues. They have no fewer than 16 committees and organizations in that church, you know, that would be like, reverse the arms race began there, you know, that kind of thing. Nuclear freeze, peace and justice groups. Now, I'm not a member, and so it's unfair, really, in a way, for me to celebrate this church so much because I don't have to live with the day in, day out, you know. So I'm sure they have problems. But George Regis was the rector there for many years, and he is absolutely wonderful. The vision that he sets out in his preaching is akin to Martin Luther King Jr. So he's now retired, and the man who took his place, a Southerner, James, or something Bacon, is equally good. You know, so they just keep forging ahead. And so it makes me think that it's possible, but they're probably larger than your church, you know.
Oh yeah,
they're big.
Well, leadership by the pastor makes an incredible difference. And wimpy pastors, they're you know, the ones who are hiding the key in their pockets, and we can't open that door.
And like, I mean, the members too. I've seen it both ways. I've seen the pastors, you know, holding things down. And I've also seen pastors way ahead of the congregation.
Yeah.
Oh, no. So I've seen
yeah.
that.
Right. Yeah.
I think a lot of pastors, you know, may be interested in going that way, but certainly don't want to be dragging the congregation somewhere that the congregation isn't ready to go. So
yeah.
A few vocal pastors say,
match.
This is really important to us, can be the kind of the safety net that a pastor needs to start talking about it out loud. It's kind of it's a weird thing because it can get locked up, and maybe there's people, pastors interested, and there's people in the congregation who are interested, but they never get together,
yeah.
You know, and it just stays kind of stuck.
I was a delegate to our Synod convention not this summer, 99, but 98, the Western Washington team. I'd never been to anything like that before. We talked about some really dull little things, and then priests who were reconciled with Christ issue came up. And it was only 98 outside, so everybody was already kind of, you know, it was hot in there anyway. And then pretty soon it was like flames were fanning. And I'm such an ignorant person. I've done everything I could, but I haven't had every opportunity on earth. And I just didn't know people had such strong feelings against it all. I'm just a live and let live person. And people who, you know, say they belong to the same ELCA, our organization, I do what it's saying, just make my ears burn and my conscience to suffer. And of course it was tabled, you know, nothing could proceed because there wasn't enough agreement, and it was, well, some of the most, I say this for humor because some of the most people against the supporting the Reconciling Christ thing. I asked my pastor if she knew anything about this. I hadn't heard of this parish before. And she said, they still use the red ale. what you want? It's new. So. But anyway, to hear all of that and have it end up just being tabled, not anything. You know what? Strong against means at least you're. It adds up somehow, and then just always things being tabled or passive or no action. It's really difficult.
I would have to say I feel much more comfortable in a church that's clear on where they stand on that issue.
Yeah.
Either way, my preference, of course, is that they be accepting, but at least if they say they're not accepting, I know.
Yeah.
Well, it's getting to the end of our time, so I hope now you know other people are interested in talking about this. I hope you keep up the conversation, and maybe you'll be able to practice some clues at the end. Head out to the dining room. But I hope you have enjoyed the chance to talk, and you have gotten some good ideas to take back.
Do you know me?